Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This piece was published on the 25th of October, 2022, and is entitled Still Forest Lives. I've said it before, forester therapy. So here are pictures that might please eyes and ease minds. I've taken the camera out into these Keats Island forests many times, and who knows, maybe shared shots of the same living plants. Not going to apologize. Come along, let me take your eyes for a walk. Did I mention therapy? I don't think it's controversial to say that we're years into a dark time for the planet and the soul, and if you're not feeling the darkness, you're in a better spot than most, definitely than me. No point in running down the dreary list of shared sorrows one more time. We all know the darkness visible in the culture and politics and air and water, and then many have their private personal stressors as well. I've mentioned mine. So hey, let's go out into the woods. All the plants pictured below are stressed but happy. Everyone has a painful weather story these days. Vancouver's was two-faced. It didn't rain between early July and last Friday. The Pacific Northwest is not built for drought. Wildfires set in, and for day after day, the smoke and dust were thick, and everyone's throat was scratchy. Trees don't cry, but you can tell when they're hurting. Two-faced, I said? Well, weeks after weeks of balmy temperatures and clear skies, into October, forsooth. The restaurant and pub patios were full, and the parks and the bike paths and beaches. It was nice, as in nice but wrong. But then it rained. By the time we got to the woods to take these pictures, everything green had had one big generous drink. While trees also don't sing, the space between them, full of rising damp, felt quietly exuberant. And here's a picture which shows the roots of a fallen over tree, and in among the roots are lodged some rocks, quite pretty rocks actually, and it's all sort of mossy, and the bottom of the tree is a pleasant brown. It's a nice looking picture. Trees fall, as must we all someday, going roots up, and those roots pull along bits of the buried landscape. These are just pretty rocks, but a fair-sized drift log on our foreshore once had what looked like an old transistor radio lodged down there, and I wonder how the hell that happened. This may have been a forest walk, but only this picture is just trees. And, well, yeah, the picture is a lot of trees, mostly vertical trunks covered with moss, and then a quite glowy set of green and yellow leaves in the sort of center-right foreground. This is a youngish big-leaf maple, Acer macrophyllum. It's the only deciduous tree that stands as tall as the great Pacific Northwest evergreens that surround it. There are no trees I love more. With the onset of rain, finally, these glowing leaves will soon be on their way to rejoin the soil that nourishes the giants. Let's look sideways now, not up, at a huge round rocky mass that has become entirely coated over the years with moss, which generously leaves space for the occasional fern and certain shrubs, which however October has reduced to bare sticks. Since bits on the wire are sort of kind of free these days, I'm offering two image variations. I'm pretty ruthless about tossing out the just slightly inferior take on any subject, but just couldn't this time. So there's two pictures here, and this thing is a vaguely breast-shaped rock. Of course, you can't see any rock since it's covered with a uniform thick coat of moss. And, well, the description is in the narrative that you just heard. Very, very pretty. One of them actually is centered on the rock. The other includes some of the rather dark gray foreboding bare trees downhill from it. All of these pictures are taken with my Fujifilm X-T30, purchased in Hong Kong in 2019. That's a link. I love the pictures it takes and the Fujifilm lens lineup. The camera did what I wanted when I was hiking many kilometers per day on obscure sections of the Great Wall, but I've come to sort of hate it because it's too small for my big, fat Alberta farm family hands. As I write, Fujifilm is in the middle of rolling out a generation of cameras, which are going to be better along any measurable dimension than the one that took the pictures you're looking at. Except, they'll be bigger and heavier than this one. But who does lightweight traveling in the 20s anyhow? I did for decades, spriting off on an intercontinental jet, often upgraded to a lascivious lie-down compartment. It was great. I'm not saying I'll never do that again, because after all, air travel only constitutes 2.5% of the global carbon load. But we all need to ease off. Ever since I leapt into the Fujifilm ecosystem in 2013, that's a link, I've remarked on how these cameras seem to have a special affinity for scenes with a whole lot of complicated stuff in them. And I'm left a little sad because these shots in Lightroom on a big screen deliver way more than I can coax out of your web browser. Consider this leaf. It looks pretty good, but keep zooming in. So here we have three pictures of a dead big leaf maple leaf on the forest floor. It's big, and it's a lovely rich brown and yellow color, and it has a little puddle of water in it, which reflects the out-of-focus trees above. It's all quite striking. And you know, the first picture has some context. The second one is mostly just the leaf, and the third one is really up close, and it's striking. There's little bits of needles from the evergreen trees and so on, peppering the surface of the leaf. It's a really rich, rich-looking thing. I think that's enough detail for now. All the pictures so far have featured a reasonably pure forest setting. Let's wind up the therapy with a human-sourced forsythia that lives in front of our cabin and has come through a lot of hard weather and neglect, yet still blesses us with blossoms in mid-October, an instance of the infinitesimally small benefits of the otherwise catastrophic unrushing effects of pumping too much carbon into the atmosphere we all rely on to sustain life. And here's a really pretty picture of a big forsythia bush which has glowing pink flowers, not a Barbie pink, a rich pink, I would say, with quite a bit of red in it, and then nicely contrasting with the green. Hang in there. Things suck, but we are not without hope. That's all, folks.